Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus. With me this week is Bachel.
Yo!
And Campster.
Hello.
Josh.
Witty intro.
Nice try. And Rutskarn.
It really wasn't.
I have gone first every week since I've joined.
Yeah, nepotism.
I will spoil the method that I use to determine who goes first and who goes last.
It's the list of people in the fucking vent room, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So you're first because you get here first, Rachel.
It's alphabetical, isn't it?
It's alphabetical.
Oh. Well,
how do you not know this?
I don't know, because I don't go around alphabetizing random things in Windows. Do you? Do you do that?
No.
Also, this week, order of appearance is also alphabetical, so there you go.
I was here before Chris. Oh, no, I wasn't. That's right.
And, okay, two nights ago, I got an email from some marketing thing. Oh, you got to check out this new game, Husk. It's like a Silent Hill kind of game. And I was like, all right. Lots of games pretend to go after that particular crown. Lots of games claim to be Silent Hill. And nobody really understands. They just think, well, monsters, right? You just fight lots of monsters. That's Silent Hill. But I was like, all right, I will check out this game. And I can't remember where I read about it, but it was someplace I trust, like Eurogamer or Rock Paper Shotgun. And they were like, oh, yeah, this looks pretty good. And I was like, oh, and I nearly bought it. I was on the store page, and then I was like, oh, I should finish this other work, and then I'll buy it. And then I never came back to it. I forgot about it. And apparently I just saved myself a bunch of money, because Chris has played it, and... Chris?
I don't want to be too mean. I really don't. I feel bad. I feel really bad.
All right, let's let Steam talk for you. 16% of the 12 user reviews for this game are positive.
It doesn't help that it ticks all the boxes for me of, like, immediate pet peeves in terms of a lot of design tropes. So I'm trying to figure out how the best way to break this down that isn't just going full off and ranting about it. Thing number one is it's a game made by Polish developers trying to make a very serious game about a very serious horror game about an American returning to his hometown in the vague mountainous Pacific. Again, it's vaguely inspired by Silent Hill, so it's sort of mountains and pine trees sort of place. And first of all, the town's called Shivercliff, which is a pretty big, blatant...
Yeah.
But it's a lot of it is I'm trying to figure out which is more offensive to me, the writing or the design. Because the writing is really, really bad, but I don't want to rag on it too much because, again, it's a foreign made game that is translated to English. And
like, is it bad translation or like actual just really bad writing?
No, it's really bad writing, but I don't want to be mean to it. Like, I really don't want to punch down, but also first of all, the protagonist is completely alone aside from the monsters, at least as far as I've gotten in the game so far. And he talks to himself, but he talks to himself in like non sequiturs because apparently we don't hear the rest of his thoughts. We just occasionally hear a thing that responds to the room you're in. So you walk into a room with a bunch of dolls and it's supposed to be really creepy because it's like, oh, dolls are creepy things. And you walk into the room and the guy just goes, God damn dolls. Like, he hates dolls, and it's out of nowhere, and it's like almost absurdistly funny.
Are you the Doom Marine?
It's really bad.
You actually make me really want to write a comedy horror dub of like a one of these like indie horror games.
This game could have been improved so much if it was just a little bit more campy, if it had a smidge of self-awareness, but it really doesn't feel like it does. It plays it very straight, and as a result, it is just so weirdly tone deaf. So the game opens with it. You're on a train with your wife and your daughter, and they get up to go do something or whatever, and then the game immediately transfers power to you, and then, like, you don't know how much time has passed since they got up to go do their thing. So you get up, and then you start walking around the train, and the train is completely abandoned. And as you make your way to the front of the train, you keep seeing your daughter in snippets in the ahead of you, and you keep walking forward, and then the train crashes, and you wake up, and you're the only survivor as far as you can tell, and nobody is around in the town or anywhere, and you go... The hospital. We've got to get to the hospital. That's where they would have taken the victims.
Oh.
So you start walking, and you walk, and the first thing you do is stop into a gas station. And you don't call for help or do anything believable. You find a flashlight with two batteries. And then even that's hilariously written, because it's like, you find a flashlight and two batteries in an empty gas station, and you go, I really should pay for this. And as the animation starts putting the batteries in, you go, fuck it, whatever. And you literally just steal a flashlight after doing that. Like, it's stuff like that. That sounds funny, but is played straight.
It sounds like your character knows he's in a Silent Hill wannabe game. I need to start looking for my family. They've been out of my field of vision for nearly 20 seconds.
If it had like a smidge of self-awareness, I would love to believe that. But then you take the flashlight and you go into town and you like walk through one building, and then the flashlight you just got runs out of batteries, because that's the kind of game this is.
Well, I guess I have to go rob another gas station. It's a shame, though. I'm looking at the Steam page, and this game looks really cool. The screenshots are really nice.
I have played games like this before, and... I really am hesitant to say this, having no knowledge of the development team's makeup, but I have played games that play like this before, and typically what they are games made by a team of artists making a labor of love project, largely inspired by some other title, that has no consideration really for design or for story, but is driven by, hey, we can reproduce this because we know all the art assets. And that seems to be a lot of what this is that's what it feels like. It is not a well-designed game. There are some cool ideas. There are one or two cool ideas. But it also is not designed for a keyboard and mouse. You kind of need a gamepad for it, even though it's a first-person game, because they have all these interactive bits that require you to do specific controls that are designed to be done with an analog stick. So it'll be activate this switch, and it's supposed to be done by like selecting it and then flipping a switch, flipping your right thumb. But instead, you kind of just hit E to use the fuse box, and then you drag your mouse around, but everything has weight, kind of like Amnesia, and it feels like they were inspired by that Amnesia. You use your mouse like a real arm to sort of open doors and close doors, but it feels really clunky outside of an analog stick. It just doesn't work. I like the effort. They apply it to lots of little things. Like, you find a cassette tape, like an 80s style music cassette, and you have to play it, and you literally have to walk over to the radio, press the eject button, put the tape in, hit play, find out it's at the end, pop it back open, and then rewind it with a pencil, which is kind of cool, but doing it with a mouse is just the most tedious, frustrating thing in the world. I'm trying to think of other things to say about this game. The other thing that drove me nuts about the level design, a lot of this game takes place in this city. Again, very Silent Hill inspired, so it takes place in a city. Very, very not American city. It very, very much looks more like, I would imagine, a European city. Lots of back alleys with stores, with storefronts in the back alleys. Typically, small town America doesn't have that. Usually, everything's right up on the main street. And that's not a judgment call. That's just the architecture of most American small towns I've been in. There's not a lot of buildings crunched up against each other where you would need to, you know, go behind the building in the back alley to get into a deli. And they do it so that you can walk down a back alley and then have all these storefronts and then also monsters. The level design in having a city like that is kind of awkward, because I remember playing Left 4 Dead, the commentary for Left 4 Dead, and they talked about how hard it was to sort of direct four players in a multiplayer game, especially newbies, to the right place, and they decided the best way to do that was with lighting, and they sort of light your path in front of you, and as long as you're following the right path, that's sort of how you're supposed to go. This game does not do that at all. There are basically distraction lights everywhere that point to non-interactable doors or empty things that are walled off by a dumpster or a mesh fence, and you we'll walk into dead ends multiple times, not in a tense way, like, oh man, I hope the monster doesn't find me while I'm screwing around, but like, instead of finding your wife and going to the hospital, you're walking down every back alley in the stupid city because you have no idea where you're going. It's
the muddled level design where you can't tell what's scenery and what's gameplay. Yeah.
See, that kind of shit is surprising to me whenever a team of primarily artists does something so amateurish. I mean, that's like composition 101.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, in image, in like composing a painting or a photo or whatever, you know, it's a static image and you only have so much space to do your composition. But like, the idea is, you know, you want to point the eyes to places that are actually interesting. And you do that with contrast and breaking the image up into certain segments and stuff like that. And like, that kind of all applies to the sort of like, hey, where do we want players to look in this video game?
Oh, the other design thing I wanted to complain about, I'm not very far yet, so I don't really know if there's, you know, any super big strong guns or whatever, but the combat that I have seen so far is comedy, because it's this really limp animation of just waving
combat.
Yeah, the monsters can see you and you can beat them back sometimes. Sometimes you can't. I haven't quite figured that part out yet. I don't know if there's different kinds of monsters that you can't kill yet, but you get a lead pipe. And you try to hit them with the lead pipe, but it's this really limp animation of it doesn't, like, it's not like you hit them and then the animation changes to reflect that you hit them. It just keeps going and you're in one smooth motion, and the monster doesn't have a pain animation, so the monster doesn't respond and it's trying to hit you. So what ends up happening is the monster sees you and runs towards you, and you start spamming the attack button. So you are flailing your arm without intersecting anything physically, and he's running up to you and just wailing his arms without anything happening physically, and it's just two people standing face to face waving their arms, and one of them ends up dead. And sometimes it's you, and sometimes it's the monster.
It looks like a slap fight.
Yes, it is a monster slap fight. And that's when, wow, you're trying to be sneaky by the monsters. I think Amnesia inspired a lot of this, and they have a sneaking mechanic where you're supposed to sneak by the monsters. It's not as good as Amnesia's, where you're not supposed to look and you can clearly tell where they are. The monsters are largely static. It's kind of like the witch, actually, in Left 4 Dead. Like, the monsters are largely static, and you just don't want to upset them.
So the monsters are environmental hazards.
Sometimes they're not. Sometimes they're walking around, but especially in the beginning of the game, they are just environmental hazards, yeah. Where you just sneak around them, and then if you happen to get caught, monster slap fight. I really don't want to be too mean to this game. It's a freshman effort from a young dev out of development house out of Poland. I really don't want to be like, this game is the worst. It's not the worst ever. And it's very pretty. It runs fine. It's an Unreal Engine game. It looks very nice. The lens flares in particular are choice. The writing and gameplay really don't hold up. So unless you really, really, really want to explore it, interpretation of an American small town, I ended up getting it because it was in the Humble Bundle this month, and I really liked this month's monthly Humble Bundle. Was actually really good.
Doing that,
I did when I lost my job, but I got my job, a new job, so I'm back.
Quit your addiction.
It's not an addiction. God, I just never canceled because I was lazy, and then I lost my job, and so I canceled it, and now I have employment again. So I'll tell you what, the real reason I went back on it, $12 for XCOM 2, which was the cheapest I had seen anywhere.
Sure. If you didn't have XCOM 2 already, that makes sense.
You know, $11 in most states in the United States, it will be enough to pay someone to punch you right in the face.
You're really not having fun.
He's
with XCOM
right.
2, are you, Retzkar?
It's rough. It's rough when you put XCOM 2 on Iron Man, but I won't go over this again.
You should write about it.
Going back to the combat reminds me of so Frictional Games, the Amnesia guys, their first foray into horror was the Penumbra series, and their first game in that series, Penumbra Overture, actually had combat,
and it wasn't
and it was
great.
Like the silliest thing you could imagine. It was like, yep, you flicked your mouse in the direction you wanted to make your character swing, like a pipe or whatever. It was really bad.
Yeah, and that, That's kind of why I don't want to rag on them too hard, because everyone's first effort is not necessarily their best. Everyone gets better. And so, I mean, Penumbra is okay, but they really didn't get good until Amnesia. And
well, hold on, I'm not finished. It's worse than that, because the primary enemy in the game was, like, these demon hellhounds. And they apparently were incapable of any sort of vertical movement, so you could just jump on top of a box and be totally safe and beat every single one of them in a level with a pipe to death, and that then there would be no more monsters to deal with. And once I figured that out, it was very hard for me to resist doing it because they were so annoying.
Right. Right, like, they're prowling around in the darkness, and I found the same thing, and I realized, oh, I could sneak by these, but, or I could make a shitload of noise, jump up on this box, beat them to death, and so it
draw
just
everything
killed
the entire level to this box, and then just kill every single one of them.
Yeah, oh, it just ruined what little horror the game had to offer.
Yeah, I never finished it because of that.
There's nothing worse than a horror game character that cannot hurt you. That is one of the least... I think that's one of the most vexing things to see in a video game in any circumstance, is like some kind of freaky-looking monster that should be scaring you that is just completely impotent while the music is blaring with its like high shrieking violins and there is no hazard. Like, I don't know if you can have a video
Chinese
game fail
room,
more conclusively.
Fortunately, the Chinese room learned from Frictional Games' mistakes and made certain that their evil pigs were really, really easy to jump on top of and ride around. Fucking machine for pigs, dear God.
Oh, man. We'll never let them off for that one, will we?
No.
So, wrapping up about Husk, it does look good in screenshots. It looks good enough that I nearly bought it. It is unfortunate. You know, I think they didn't do themselves any favors when they claimed Silent Hill. Is my understanding of Silent Hill just different from the rest of the world? Every time there's a spooky town, people call it Silent Hill. For me, Silent Hill is the one series that's always built around specifically psychological. And I don't just mean messing with your head. I mean messing with the character and what they're thinking so that it's about the character. And nobody else seems to understand
that. I would
say
Amnesia was that. Actually, Frictional Games stuff is all about that for the most part. But
the writing here is not great, but I feel like that's a direction they're kind of going in. Because like you end up at the police department on your way to the hospital. I don't know why I have yet to get to the hospital to find my wife, even though no one is in this town. It's not acting like a rational human being, but you go to the police department, and again, this is the guy's hometown, and he goes, ah, I know this place, perhaps too well. And then you go inside the police department, and he goes on this long story about, like, everybody's got things they regret, but sometimes small, sometimes big, but I have things in my closet that I could never forgive myself for. So I feel like they're hinting at maybe there is something that they're going to be exploring thematically about his past, and that's something about his wife and kid, probably. It is very Silent Hill inspired in that sense. It's just sort of, again, like I was saying, it feels like it was inspired by Amnesia and Silent Hill and is blindly aping a lot of what works in them without really fully understanding or internalizing it. And that's, I think it earns the reference to Silent Hill. I just don't think it lives up to it.
All right. Josh. You've been playing Borderlands, and before we began the show, you said something heretical, so I dare you to say it again.
Borderlands 1 is obviously better than Borderlands 2. What's wrong with you?
You are the wrongest person who ever lived.
Okay, so I'm not going to talk about the writing in Borderlands and Borderlands 2, because they're different beasts, and Borderlands 2 pisses a lot of people off. And Borderlands 1 didn't piss anybody off because Borderlands 1 didn't interest anyone.
Really? Because I thought that was probably the strongest point you potentially had.
Oh, no, well, I'm not using it, so there we go. I liked it well enough, but I think that it's a little silly to judge a Borderlands game on its story, considering that it's a nice bonus, but it's ultimately a very small part of the experience. At least it was when I played it. The reason for that, I think, is that Borderlands is the quintessential co-op game. And when you're playing co-op, it's really more about your interactions and the stories you create with the other players than it is about the stories that are created in the game. At least it was in our case. You know, we appreciated the jokes, but we didn't really slow down for them all that often. And we were often talking over it, so... Borderlands 1, combat-wise, is horrible and indefensible, and I'm really curious where you're gonna start on this one. So let's hear you talk first, and then we'll see what's specifically wrong about.
Well, having played it just very recently, I would contend that the combat is not horribly broken, though I will admit that the Borderlands 2 is better in terms of being a shooter, in terms of like tight controls and feeling like, hey, I'm not missing something
okay,
that I should clearly be hitting.
Considering that they are shooters, where are you going with this?
No, they're not. They're loot games. Borderlands is a game about getting cool guns, and all the guns in Borderlands 2 fucking suck.
I'm gonna let you dig this one a little deeper, Josh. Keep going.
In Borderlands 2, they really ramped up on all the pseudo-MMO bullshit in ways that is, like, just completely destroyed the game for me. Like, all enemies scale a lot more aggressively than they did in Borderlands 1. And your level scale, like the way level and damage are calculated, is also much more aggressive in terms of scaling. So basically Borderlands 2 is a game about getting a cool gun and then playing for 20 minutes and having that cool gun be completely obsolete. Because you can go, like, you can go up like two or three levels and then your fucking legendary fucking, like, awesome submachine gun is now lamer than a white pistol. In Borderlands 1, I could get, like, a fucking Malawan Hellfire, and I could roll around with that gun for, like, 15 levels, and that gun would still be pretty fucking good at level 40 when it was awesome at level 25, and that was cool. And that was the thing that drove me forward with Borderlands 1 more than anything else, was that, like, hey, I found this really fucking cool gun. What can I do with it? And in Borderlands 2, there just aren't those. You can't hold on to a gun for that long. Moreover, Borderlands 2 made everything about resource gathering way more annoying. Like, bullets now cost more money as you level up for some reason, and also all the ammo regeneration skills are gone, so you pretty much just have to spend a ton of money on bullets all the time. That sounds fun.
Right, but the mechanic which just auto-replaces bullets is just a replacement for a large part of the game's mechanics. It's like that power up that lets you heal by killing people in BioShock. Like, it's so good that it makes you wonder why the other version of the mechanic existed in the first place. So I could see, like, why you're annoyed that, you know, in Borderlands 2 buying ammo is a huge deal. But on the other hand, like, the existence of that power up kind of just showed that, like, the whole bullet economy in Borderlands 1 was just more trouble than it was worth in the first place.
Well, so every single class has abilities that allow them to regenerate ammo. Like, you can just spec into that. That's not a multiplayer thing where you have to carry around a soldier so he can drop his turret and give you stuff. I mean, you can do that if you really want to, but there are also other skills that allow you to get more ammo and mods that allow you to get more ammo. And, like, the bullet economy isn't any different between the two games.
I guess my point is that I'm not inclined to give Borderlands 1 a point for this.
Well, the bullet economy isn't any different between the two games because you don't ever find as many bullets as you fire to get those bullets. So the only difference is that in Borderlands 2, your only recourse is to spend increasing amounts of money to buy, like, 12 sniper rounds. And I mean ridiculously increasing amount of monies. I think at like level 60 in Borderlands 2, like 12 sniper rounds is like literally $68,000.
So this isn't like too far from my experiences. You're not completely off base here. It's just I think the thing where I'm having trouble sort of grasping your position is when you're like, okay, yes, there's better guns that you have for a longer period of time to shoot, when shooting is not very much fun. Like, the actual process of using the guns you randomly get sucks. Like, it really sucks in Borderlands. Like, every combat feels like I'm a slow-moving tank, and then I'm just, like, firing, like, round after round into these big beasts that aren't visibly affected by it.
Yeah,
and then when my ammo regenerates, it adds to the feeling of grind and endless repetition to the... It creates a kind of agelessness where I'm not running out of ammo, my enemies aren't dying, am I even alive? Is this even real life?
Have you only ever played Borderlands with a full party?
That is accurate.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that would explain some of the problem, because Borderlands 1 aggressively scales up the HP of enemies when you have more than one person in the server, like proportionate to how many people you have hanging out with you.
That's not an argument in the game's favor.
Yeah, yeah. I really hate that they do that. It actually made me hate multiplayer, because enemies just became such huge damage sponges. And I really think more enemies would have been better than the same, you know, oh, you've got four people? Well, here's four times as many guys to shoot, instead of here's guys with four times as many hit points.
Because,
it was just such a chore to play with people, and that's sort of a massive, that's still a problem in the series. That's always been.
Right. That's where I would put it. Like, I in fact think that Borderlands 2 is worse when it comes to bullet sponges, because at higher difficulty levels and at like higher levels in general, because of the way enemies scale faster than you do, they get more health, they get regen, which was not a thing in Borderlands 1 as far as I can remember. And it means that, like, you will inevitably run into the bullet sponge hell problem. And playing on any new game plus level difficulty, like, makes it much, 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 much worse. Like, we're talking, like, in Borderlands 1, enemies, like, would scale up their health linearly with regard to your level, and they would turn into bullet sponges eventually. In Borderlands 2, it was exponential. Like, I don't think that Borderlands 2 is better in that regard at all. Like, this killed my playthrough when I was playing through with Seamus. Admittedly, I don't remember how they scaled that up with multiplayer, how that was compared to Borderlands 1. Maybe it was worse in Borderlands 1, with, like, maybe they just got more health than they should have, but, like, I don't think that Borderlands 2 is at all innocent in this, and I frankly think it's worse. Like higher level stuff in Borderlands 2 all revolved around slagging enemies, and that was fucking boring as all hell. Because there was no way you were going to kill them otherwise.
All right, then I think I was expecting a much more serious heresy. I think we agree on what the game does, and we just disagree on how we play it. Also, the guns becoming obsolete was a solution to a problem that I had, where I'd find a really good gun. You know, I'm there to loot, right? And I find a good gun, and it's this purple gun, this is amazing, I'm never going to find anything better than this in the next 20 levels. So it feels like, well, now I'm sort of done playing the game. Like, the whole thing keeping me pushing forward is that feeling of, I'll bet there's something even better out there. And once you feel like there isn't, then I kind of want to stop playing.
Well, see, that actually was part of the fun for me. It was like getting a really cool, like really rare loot drop in Diablo 2 early on. It was like, wow, I found this thing that's like way more powerful than anything else at this level. I'm a god, and I will be a god for a while. This is really cool. Sometimes it isn't even a gun you respect into, and then you're like, well, maybe I should just respect my whole build around this one gun.
Yeah.
Also, I think the story in Borderlands 2 is lame.
And the other thing I really, really think is much better in Borderlands 2 is you feel like you're hitting enemies in a visual sense. There's better pain animations, there's more different kinds of enemies, more attack patterns, more movement patterns, all of that's better.
Sure, that's true. I'll give it that. I mean, Borderlands 1 is like man-sized enemy, slightly larger man-sized enemy, or melee monster.
Yeah, or the skags. Oh my goodness, yeah, how many billion skags do you have to kill in that game?
A lot. I'm not at all saying that Borderlands 1 is perfect. I just don't like Borderlands 2, like, at all. I think they took everything that like, all the wrong lessons from Borderlands 1 about what to do with it. And then they made a sequel prequel that nobody liked, so. And now Borderlands 3 is, like, and then they made a MOBA shooter that nobody liked. And, like, now what the hell is Gearbox even doing?
The sequel prequel really bugs me because I absolutely love the character Athena. She's the most fun character to play, but I hate this. I hate everything. I hate the environments of the pre-sequel. I hate the story. I hate everything about it, except I love playing as Athena. She's got the shield, and she does the Captain America thing where you bring up the shield and it absorbs damage. So the more people shoot you, the shield like charges up and starts glowing and spinning, and it feels awesome. And then this is your special ability. You don't just go around doing this all the time. This is, you know, her special ability. And then you release the shield and it'll slam into somebody and deliver all that damage to them and then come back to you. And it is just so much fun. I just cannot do it enough. All the other characters, I like hoard the special ability. Oh, I gotta save this in case I meet somebody. I gotta save this special ability. I want to hoard it until that one perfect moment, and I end up never using it until a boss fight. But Athena, I was just like constantly using that power.
You have that problem with a lot of things in video games.
I do.
Found.
But Athena, I did not have that problem. She was so much fun to unleash her special power that I just did it constantly, and I loved it. But the problem is she's only playable in the pre-sequel, and everything else about the pre-sequel is dumb and boring and irritating. And so it's kind of ruined the series for me. I'm like, I want to play Borderlands. I want to play as Athena. Well, I can't play in the good game with the good character. Oh, well, never mind. I'll go do something else.
I also kind of felt that way about Lilith from Borderlands 1 in Borderlands 2, because Maya's character tree was much lamer, and there wasn't anybody else that really had some of the cool stuff that she did.
Yeah, Maya wasn't very satisfying to use. She was really... And I didn't like the Gunzerker that much either. He was not that...
I didn't really like Axton all that much.
Yeah. Yeah, Borderlands 2 really did have the lamest character abilities. Even the character designs weren't that great.
I mean, they had Gage, so...
If you pre-ordered or bought the DLC or whatever.
And yeah, then, like, Gage was actually my main, game, to be honest.
After I stopped playing the game the last time, they, like, released some sort of Psycho that you can play, and I think you
can Krieg
on fire or something.
Yeah. Rutskarn. You have been playing adventure games, old ones, according to the rumors. Let's talk about that.
That is accurate, yeah. Okay, well, hang on a second. Sorry, keep... Well, to be totally honest, that's kind of sad. I have been playing some sort of more old school adventure, point and click adventure games, and part of the reason why I've been doing that is because they remind me of my mom, who used to play those. She actually, this was an interesting thing. So I grew up, you know, playing video games. And with my dad, it was games like Diablo and Quake and StarCraft, you know, kind of the more like aggressive, active, competitive style of video game, you know, where you're sort of directly and quickly reacting to a threat.
Okay, so your dad's a bro gamer. Got it.
Yeah, he did play, like, bro games. And, you know, my mom played a few of those too, but kind of her deal was she bought the adventure games that were, like, you know, third person or very rarely first person. A protagonist who's usually female, who's usually in some sort of situation where there's, like, kind of a mystery or a murder or some precipitating incident, which requires an investigation, which eventually turns out to have supernatural elements.
Okay, so she was a huge fan of Laura Bow.
Like, that kind of game. I think Laura Bow might have been a little too early. She came in... I think, actually, although I don't know, it's possible she played that, you know, even before I was, before I was that age where I would remember it. But in my experience, you know, she played games, like the Gabriel Knight games were big ones, Siberia, The Longest Journey, she played the Black Dahlia, I believe she played Full Throttle, the Seventh Guest, of course, and then the 13th Hour later, and also just dozens and dozens of games that will be completely forgotten by history because they were boxed releases sold for $20 at Best Buy that can't even be found online anymore, that had stupid names like Secrets of the Pharaohs, Quest of the Crystals, or like just other, you know, like basically just this commodity games that were not particularly high quality and didn't have a recognizable studio behind them. They were just put in the space for that kind of game for the sort of people who like to play that sort of thing. And it's a sort of thing where I actually... It was also a little bit taboo because a lot of the games she was playing were kind of for adults. Like, you know, the Black Dahlia, for example, has, like, gruesome decapitations and murders in it. So I wouldn't get to watch all the time. I just get to watch some of the time, and so it sort of became very, it was like a thing that we'd share together. I mean, you know, I say this, and in the meantime, I'm, like, blowing people apart with the grenade launcher and Quake. My mom and my dad had very different standards, for what was acceptable.
Yeah.
I feel.
There wasn't really room for another chair there, and, you know, I'd sort of sit, like, beside her or behind her, and I just, like, sort of scrunch in and, like, I'd annoy her by, like, oh, did you click on that thing yet? And she'd be like, yes, I already moused over it, and it didn't turn out to have a glyph. And I'd be like, are you sure? I didn't see you mouse over it. And then she'd mouse over it, and she'd be like, look, you see? And I'll be like, oh, okay. Well, what about that thing?
Oh my goodness, you are exactly describing my relationship with my father.
Well, yeah. And the thing is that, like, people talk a lot about, like, their upbringing, like, playing video games. And, like, a sort of, like, their early gaming memories. And I feel like this is one... It's not unique, obviously. You know, case in point, you know, you had a very similar experience. But this is... I felt like this is something I shared with her that not a lot of people shared growing up. Like, not other people had growing up. And I feel like it gave me a very different perspective from an early age and what a video game is. And, you know, as, you know, people know, you know, she passed away in November of last year. And it's been, I don't know, in a way, it's been kind of a way of getting in touch with those memories. Because, you know, once you lose somebody to cancer, you know, for usually for the last, you know, half a year or the last few years, you know, they're not really the person that you remember for most of your life. You know, they're sick and they can't do much. They can't talk much. And, you know, I didn't really have my memory of her as kind of like a person who is enjoying life, and it's nice to be able to access those memories again by playing these games. So, yeah, by the way, a lot of these games really fucking suck. In case you thought I was getting too maudlin.
That's me in Half-Life.
Yeah.
Describe
it's
one
It's nostalgic,
for us.
But... okay, well, actually, let's see. Because like a lot of these games, I find some redeeming value. Gabriel Knight, obviously, is a classic. Still Life, another game I picked up, which I don't even know if she played it or not. I'm sort of half and half on whether that's the case. I do remember that once she bought a game, and all of the dialogue, like the voice acting, for some reason was like 5% speed. Like... And it wasn't just like it was slow. It was like it was slow and deep. Like the pitch was all wrong too. So like literally, like her character would be talking, and I remember the line. It's like, it's the same old story. A door is locked, and I don't have the key. And he'd say like, "What's the same old story? A door is locked, and I don't have the key."
I'm clicking the mouse furiously. Skip the dialogue.
Is this like a weird like thing of the dream sequence? And then we get out of it and we're just like ordering at a cafe and it's like, and we're like, oh shit, is it too late to return this? Because those were the days where you could return a video game.
I can't remember back that far. Nobody can.
Yeah. And so I played The Seventh Guest a while ago, and I think I talked about it on the Diecast, and that was an interesting experience to revisit, because it's full of logic puzzles. You know, they're legit, but they're just like kind of, something about them is a little bit bullshit. And it's like, once you figure out the answer, you're kind of like, oh, well, okay. I mean,
there's some unspoken rule
you would assume that the puzzle would follow that it doesn't. And it's not like right. In a clever way, it's like in an annoying way.
I remember loving The Seventh Guest. I thought it was brilliant. I was obsessed with the game. And then I went back to it a couple years ago. I picked it up on GOG. And I played it and I found it, nothing about it held up. It was just a garbage game now. It's like so annoying to get to the puzzles, all the stupid fussing around and the painfully slow animations that are just agonizing to watch and, you know, unskippable. And then once you get to the puzzle, they're really slow to interact with, and there aren't that many of them. There is not that much to that game. It's just, it's a very simple collection of very few puzzles with incredibly tedious animations between them. And it was amazed when I played through it. I like actually quit. Even my nostalgia couldn't get me through it. It's just amazing how much the perception of the game changed, having played better games.
Yeah. So, that's the thing. And I found it interesting to watch this genre sort of die out. And, you know, people talk about the death of the adventure game, right? But most of those people are talking about the death of adventure games that they hear about. Like the kind of Roberta Williams, or like the Siberia, sort of, even? Like in The Longest Journey, and like the Monkey Islands, and like the sort of the big adventure games that like were, according to lore, ultimately killed by Moon Logic. But as I think I've said before, that did not kill the genre of adventure games. They were still making those on the cheap and as commodities for years and years after Old Man Murray started complaining about it. And I witnessed that genre actually die out and get replaced with hidden object puzzles. And part of me kind of regrets that. Or not regrets, obviously, but part of me kind of like is disappointed that this sort of genre of shovelware is no longer made.
I think the death of adventure games was less the death of people making them, and it was the death of them being culturally relevant. It used to be your big AAA, well, there wasn't AAA games, but if there was a AAA game of, you know, the 90s or the 80s, it was Sierra games, especially on this PC, obviously. We're talking PC. Those were the big games. Those are the ones that people talked about. Those were the ones that if you met up with some other gamers and you had any games in common, it was probably Sierra point-and-click adventures, or, you know, not point-and-click, like move around with the arrows and type adventures. And so that they were a big deal. And so when people talked about adventure games dying, what they were really talking about is people just stopped giving a crap about them. They got made, they got played.
I think it was like,
yeah.
Well, we discovered other means of telling stories, right, too. Like, adventure games, like if you wanted a game that had a compelling narrative in it, you pretty much had adventure games in the 80s. And to an extent, the early 90s. But, like, even at that point, you know, RPGs were starting to take off in a big way. And then by the late 90s, you had shooters with stories. And, like, these things also had far more compelling and interesting gameplay, generally, than adventure games. And adventure game puzzles were kind of nuts sometimes.
Very few adventure game puzzles were fun to solve. Very few of them were fun to solve. I, you know, you get that feeling when you solve a really good puzzle and you're like, yes, oh, I feel like I'm so smart. I never got that from adventure games. I never got that I've outsmarted the game. I felt like I guessed right. Like,
oh, so this is the very specific set of actions I needed to take to get through this.
Well, it's interesting because often I feel like that's kind of a misrepresentation of what the game really was. When you get down to like this genre as it was experienced, like on the ground level, like with my mother, I noticed that like the big commonality in the storyline is the idea of mystery. And I feel like the sort of the item puzzles and like the adventure game puzzles are just mechanical ways to kind of get at the idea that you are uncovering something, to get at the idea that you are putting things together, and like to create that kind of mechanical stimulation to sort of go along with your character discovering like the solution to the mystery. I feel like it's kind of like it's kind of like if it was, imagine if it was difficult to create a first-person shooter where you actually like pointed and clicked and shot enemies. And where, like if for some reason that was too abstract to really represent well with the video game. And now imagine, like, so there's a bunch of first-person shooters where, like, you had to, like, do quick time events and reflex tests to kind of simulate the idea of you, like, successfully defeating all of these people in combat. It's like, it's getting at the thematic experience of being that character, while as best as it can with the available mechanic sets.
Right, but what I was, and that's fair. I mean, I can understand that that's what they were trying to do. It's just that that's what I wanted was a puzzle. I wanted to unravel something and get that feeling of, haha, I thought of something cool or I figured something out. And it never felt, it always felt like groping your way through a blind maze for me. And so, played for the story and I favored comedy games, and I played, you know, the real game for me was, haha, what funny things can we discover inside the text parser?
You know, I have a random note, which is, speaking of humor games, one thing I don't hear a lot of people say about Monkey Island, but my personal feeling is that the game has one of the best theme songs of any video game.
Oh, yeah.
I don't feel like that doesn't get mentioned often enough.
Also, that theme song, I realize this is a weird thing to say to compliment a piece of music, but it sounded incredible at the time. Like, everybody was struggling with those early Sound Blaster cards to get good sounds out of them. And, you know, they all kind of had that, you know, it sounds like somebody banging on a $20 keyboard in Walmart. That's kind of how it sounded. Everything just sounds like this sawtooth wave synth. And Monkey Island, I booted it up and it was this Caribbean music, and it sounded like Caribbean music. It sounded like a specific genre of sound. I'd never heard this kind of sound coming from my computer before. And it just amazed me. I did not know my computer could make sounds like that at the time. I played the game when it was fairly new. And I remember stopping as soon as I booted up the game. And, you know, the theme song came up. And it was just so amazing. I stopped and I listened through the entire thing. Just stared at the menu and listened to the theme song the entire time. Just because I was so amazed by the music. And yeah, it's a good piece of music on top of that.
I had the exact same experience with a video game when I was a child, but the video game in question was actually the first Deus Ex. The first time I played it, I just sat and I watched the thing swirl around because I really love that theme song. I especially love the part where it goes quiet and just kind of like there's just like the violins in the background.
Yes. I don't want to move on to another topic. I'm so happy right now. These are good memories.
I know, but just positivity. You know what? I'm going to go one step further, and I'm actually going to say I think that the Monkey Island theme song is actually the best pirate theme song that exists. And it's difficult because, like, Yo-Ho, A Pirate's Life for me, like, that's pretty up there. But I just don't think it has the same musicality. And, like, it's like the Monkey Island theme has such a feeling of adventure while, like, still, like, maintaining, like, that kind of lightheartedness with, like, a little bit of, like, an urgent edge to it. And while being really recognizably Caribbean, which, like, the Pirates of the Caribbean theme, like, has... It's very, like, European. And yeah. That makes some sense because, you know, in theory, a lot of the places that Pirates of the Caribbean takes place in are European colonists and the characters are, like, of European descent. But on the other hand, it does also, like, delve into... Yeah, so I don't know. I think that Monkey Island sort of gets at, like, the best feeling of kind of being at a different place while also, like, being an excellent pirate theme.
These are good memories. Rachel, you've been playing The Sims 4. Tell us about that.
Which at release was notoriously awful and everybody complained about it, yes?
That's what I thought it had left off at. I thought The Sims 4 was still awful. Is that no longer the case?
I know nothing about outside of my own brain, so don't take my words to heart. I know that The Sims 4 has a lot of the same problems as the last couple of games, but as far as I could tell, a lot of the things have been minorly fixed, and there haven't been any new additions.
Last week, I watched a Lazy Game Reviews, of the Pirates pack. But
the toddler stuff, yeah. Oh, the Pirates one?
They're not Pirates, Vampires and Toddlers was the two things he reviewed. And now I'm second-guessing
toddlers
myself.
Toddlers are free. No, those are both there. Those are both real. And Sims 3 had a Vampires pack as well.
Vampires have been in every Sims game. Maybe not the first one, but all the others.
I'm pretty sure vampires in the first one.
This is the first EA game I've ever picked up that actually seemed to have listened to criticism and fixed a lot of their bug problems, which feels really weird to say.
Oh, like what? Like, I don't even know what was wrong with Sims 4, other than people just hated it and thought it was a chopped-down game with... I didn't even know it was buggy.
It was buggy, and I don't know of all the bugs. I think Bay could speak to more of the bugs, but, a lot of people were upset, for example, that toddlers were an age that didn't exist. You went straight from newborn baby to kid in grade school to college age to adult. It was basically cutting out an entire age group of people that really bothered people. It didn't ship with pools. Pools were supposed to come in the game, and they didn't. And also, The Sims 3 had... The Sims 3 introduced that idea that, like, the entire neighborhood was a single neighborhood. It loaded everything in dynamically... seamlessly, and Sims 4 said, no, if you're at home, you're on your lot, and we're going to load in everything there. If you want to go to the store, the game's going to have to stop, load, and load you into the store, and in an EA game with serious load times, that can be a bummer.
Wait, you love serious load times?
No, I do not, but they really went back to, you know, in the first and second, I don't know as much about the first two, but
well, okay, so
I've seen...
All you really need to know about Sims 1 is that it was like The Sims 2, but older. So
The Sims 2 was an improvement on The Sims 1 in every way, and that was the last time that happened to that franchise.
You know how you never really leave your lot? Like, you go to work and your character just disappears. But then they kind of overstretched in 3, and they tried to make it load up an entire world without any loading screens in between, and it crashed the damn game all the time.
Yeah, it was terrible. It was like, you can follow your sim to work, by which we mean you can slowly load the entire town and watch them drive to their workplace and go in the building and not be able to speed up the game that much, so it takes like twice as long to wait for them to come home.
There were a lot of, like, fudgy tricks that they did to, like, you know, to simulate other Sims without having to, that are like off screen and not relevant at the moment, without having to actually simulate them doing Sim stuff. But that led to a game that had a lot of really weird stuff in it.
Well, the first thing they did was they added pools back in because the outrage was so bad, and they released a toddler's update 2 weeks ago that's completely free and it auto-updates.
You know, that seems like the dumbest thing to complain about, right? Like, oh, there's no pools in the game, but that's like such a quintessential part of The Sims at this point that it's really shocking they launched the game without the ability to make pools. Like,
well, if you're one of those people that plays the game as an acquisition of wealth, you know, kind of game where you just get the bestest house, then, you know, pool's a pretty big sign of status, of wealth
and status.
Just
buy 10 hot tubs and put them all next to each other.
But what I'm most happy about is the fact that they've expanded their cheats to include just about anything if you want it to be. So unlike Sims 3, it becomes almost completely a sandbox game if you know the right cheat codes, which was a huge problem in The Sims 3. Let's say you go into the game and you want to pretty much just play a master piano player. You have to sit down and watch them play for 3 days of pretty much real time. They now have cheats to fix that. They also have a debug cheat that you don't need to know any cheat codes for. You just click on a sim and you click the debug button and it'll reload the character. So if they have like a bowl stuck to their hand or something glitchy, it'll fix it right away, which was a huge problem in Sims 3 that sometimes led to month-long Sims project characters being gone forever. Really weird to say that EA was actually listening and doing something about the problems in their game.
I signed up for EA Access, or rather Origin Access, a little while back, mostly because they had like a 10-hour non-consecutive, so like 10 hours total game time you can spend, trial for Battlefield 1, so I can basically play through the whole entire single-player campaign with that. And one of the other things that comes with it is like a 2-day consecutive, so like 48-hour trial of The Sims 4. And I've been wondering if I should check that out. Is this a good time?
Does it
As
come
someone
with any
who played
expansions?
The Sims 3, I don't think so. I'd have to go check. Let's see.
I feel like you need at least one or two of the bigger expansions to really, really enjoy it. I liked the job expansion in Sim 4. It's not great, but I like being able to like make a cop and follow the cop to work and try to do cop things like solve murders. Like it expands the amount of role playing you can
do.
So
that was like the professions thing in The Sims 3.
Do you actually recommend that expansion? Because I've been thinking about getting it. I got one of the expansions for my birthday. I forget which one, but the jobs one I was really looking at.
I have only done it to make a cop. I have not, because I was going to do a video on police. This was back before Battlefield Hardline released, I think. and it was a long time ago.
the quintessential police game has now been made. Battlefield Hardline. Like,
it was such a boring game. That's why the video never happened.
I'm really, really interested in how they're doing the retail thing where you can just start a store that sells whatever. I don't understand how they're going to do that without making it buggy.
I didn't mess with that, unfortunately. I did mess with the cop stuff, and being a detective is kind of neat. I like that you actually have to do steps. Like, it's not just go to work and solve crimes. It's you have to actually follow the steps of, like, go to the scene, find a certain number of clues, bring the clues back to the computer, put them in, and then go out and arrest the guy. So I like that. And if it's that level of simulation for the other jobs, that's going to be kind of cool. But I can't vouch for whether or not the stores make anything buggy, unfortunately.
That sucks. I really want to have a character own a bookstore. I've wanted that for, like, since Sims 3, and I want to know I can do that before I buy it, but I haven't seen anything about it.
Like Seamus said, I would recommend watching a lot of LGR stuff. Lazy Game Reviews does a lot of Sims expansion reviews. I think that would be a good place to start, looking at some of that stuff.
I'll definitely do that. Thanks.
All right. I feel like we've done a show. Do you guys feel like we've done a show?
No. We've done at least one, and at most one.
All right. Well, I'm all showed out. I have nothing more to say about a video game. Hey, Bachel, say ludonarrative dissonance.
No, not happening.